It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that's how the critters got that way.
Are you sure about that? I mean, that...
According to Uncle Remus.
Well, that's a pretty good source.
Did you ever actually see Son of the South?
No.
I did. I did. And... yeah, no clue. I mean, now I'm like, holy shit. But it's just not... like, there's nothing explicit. And I was a kid, so subtext is not my... I mean, at that point, I'm not sure I knew what the Civil War was at that point yet. And it's mostly... it's mostly cartoons of animals with kind of racist southern accents. Like, most of it has nothing to do with Uncle Remus. But, yeah. Yeah. Weird. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Old Racist Films Review.
I forgot.
What?
I don't know what episode this is, so.
So, sorry guys, I guess we're not doing it.
I was gonna check with you before you started, and I forgot.
Ugh.
I knew there was something, right? When you said asked me if I was ready, which you always do.
You have one job.
And I always just say yes, because, as I've said often, we don't really talk about anything before the podcast. I come in,
nope.
We have a sort of a little bit of a greeting to one another. Are you ready? Yes. Go. And that's it. But sometimes I will ask what episode number it is because I forgot.
And sometimes I know. This is not one of those times.
I think it's 337.
You are correct.
So I should have just went with it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. See, now you got me thrown off my game.
Sorry.
The Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast in the world once described as the voice of a shitty generation that hasn't been born yet and hopefully never will be. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and as I previously guessed, this is episode 337.
Mm-hmm.
It's my job to know that.
It's so smart.
And I often don't, so.
Yes. I don't know why. It's not like I have a lot to talk about. I just want to get all the paperwork out of the way. So, if you never listened before, here's how this works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And folks like yourselves, cool people, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, little comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. Equestrian servants draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, that's the whole show.
Do you feel better?
I do.
Good.
Almost done. Alright, how was your week?
It was alright. We did not go see the eclipse.
I also did not. The producer did and said it was awesome. I have also encountered two or three people who were not expecting it to be a big deal for them, but found it mind-blowing, life-changing kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean...
which I find very strange. I did, for a second, look with... somebody lent me their things, and we were inside, but it's a giant window. And I looked up, and I saw the moon, and then a crescent of sun above it. And that was kind of cool to see for a second. But that was it. There wasn't really the opportunity to see it well here.
No.
The producer had to drive to... they went to Lincoln, Nebraska.
We decided... we canceled the trip we were going to take because... all the places that we had selected to view it, it wasn't going to be visible there because of overcast, whatever. And of course, all we had to do was say go an hour south of there or something and see it. But everybody was going to be doing that, right?
Yeah,
like people who lived in the path of totality, who realized they weren't going to be able to see it from their homes as they expected, they were going to get in their cars and drive an hour or so south. And that was the other concern, was the traffic. Between the traffic and the weather.
The traffic was bad.
Yeah, and we didn't want to drive in inclement weather, much less drive in traffic that was going to get us home, take twice as long to get home as it took us to get wherever we were going. And there was the consideration of, it feels like, not only is this going to be inconvenient for us, but we're contributing to a problem that we don't want to contribute to. So we hate
and
to miss.
I assume this was your plan was a day trip.
Yes.
Yeah, that would have been an absolute nightmare.
So we hated to miss it because, as you were just saying, for a lot of people, it was such a big deal, life changing, whatever. And you know, we suspected we would feel similar. I mean, we watched things on television that were very well presented. I mean, I think we got a very good sense of what it was like for people there, but clearly not what it's really like. So we very much wanted to experience it. We very much wanted to do it, but we realized that it was going to probably not be worth it to us or to the other people we were going to inconvenience by trying to
go. And strangely, we're going to have another shot like in 7 years?
2024.
Another one that will pass over the U.S.
Well, mostly the eastern United States.
Yeah.
So... But that's better because the thing about the one going through the middle is just about everybody could get there in a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So everybody was rushing to it. And the one that's going to happen in 2024, I mean, most people west of, you know, west of West Nebraska are probably going to say, no, that's too far away to go. Now, and there's probably going to be a lot of people from the eastern United States trying to go and a lot of people from the Midwest trying to go. But, you know, if we plan better... You know, maybe we'll make it in 2024. And my wife is already thinking about it, but it's just, you know, a lot of people I talked to were glad they did it, said it was worth it. But I imagine if they'd been in a car accident or something, they probably would think different. So, and I'm a very cautious person, so that just wasn't what we were going
to
do.
I haven't yet talked to my parents. I'm planning to do that this weekend to see how it went. Where they, because I mean,
because
Oregon, the National Guard was called out beforehand. Mm-hmm. The entire state ran out of weed.
But they...
Like, all sorts. Seriously.
They could enjoy it from their home, though, probably.
In theory, yeah. I mean, they absolutely could, in terms of location.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that the weather...
cooperative.
They did send a little thing about seeing it, and they saw it, and they thought it was very cool. But yeah, I don't know how the overall experience has been going.
And Lincoln didn't have any problem seeing it there weather-wise?
No, they saw it fine. There was a little time of clouds, and they sort of moved away from the clouds, and it worked. But, yeah, no, they apparently did it.
Well, that's cool. I mean, I wish we... one of the places that we probably would have ended up if we'd gone, Missouri... Jackson. No, I can't remember the town's name. Just south of Columbia, Missouri.
St. Joe.
No, Jackson.
Oh, just south of Columbia.
Yeah.
Franklin?
No, Jackson. I want to say, it's not Jacksonville. Jackson City,
Jefferson City?
Jefferson City.
Okay.
Yes, sorry.
I got stranded in Jefferson City once.
Yes, Jefferson.
Killed a relationship.
Jefferson City, we were watching.
Where I saw The Road to El Dorado.
We were watching a broadcast.
Better movie than it gets credit for.
Of the eclipses, like this thing was really good because it was like, well, it's reaching totality in this town, and then they'd go to another town where it was reaching totality. So you got to watch it several times, and Jefferson City was one of those places, and that's probably where we'd have ended up if we'd gone. We weren't intending to go that far south, but because of the clouds and stuff, we would have ended up going down there. And they barely, like, you know, they had a lot of cloud cover and stuff there, but it just cleared up. And they saw it, and then, you know,
something
stuff came
about late. The eclipse glasses, like, I could sort of see through some of the cloud cover that way. Because I looked up, I was looking up there because it was so cloudy, I was like, I'm not super worried. And then someone's like, oh, I can see something, and then they gave me the glasses. And, like, the clouds were no longer visible around it so much. So
interesting. But the coverage was really good, and we had a great time, and we enjoyed that. We're sad we missed it, but I mean, I think we made the right call for us. Hopefully next time around, we'll see it. I mean, there's, you know, eclipses aren't that rare for the whole planet, right? I mean, if you wanted...
Well, I had heard that they happen pretty frequently,
yeah,
like every year and a half or so, but just almost always over ocean.
Yeah.
Because we have so much ocean.
But if you were inclined, I mean, there's lots of places you can travel to see a total eclipse. It just, you know, most people aren't going to travel to wherever.
There are people that do. They call themselves shadow hunters, and they're way into it.
But anyway, other than that, there wasn't a whole lot. I mean, we played Uncharted 4.
Oh, yeah.
That was kind of an interesting game.
You may want to revisit No Man's Sky. I have it on authority from Stu that the latest patch has made it really awesome, like more so.
And we go back to it sometimes. There's a mode now where you can build and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, my wife loves that, so we go back to that sometimes. Have you played Uncharted 4?
No, I haven't played. I played a little of the first Uncharted and did not particularly enjoy it. I still plan to go back because I have the Uncharted Collection, which is 1, 2, and 3. It came with my PS4, I think.
We've really enjoyed the Uncharted series in general, but we didn't know why there needed to be a 4. The 3 ends in a very satisfying way. And as we played 4, we still couldn't figure out why they made it. It wasn't bad. The acting was great, as usual. Some of the writing, especially the dialogue writing, was fantastic, as usual. And the character design and animations were outstanding.
That was Thief's End, right?
Yeah, and it's worth playing just for all of those things. But in terms of the overall plot and story, not bad, but not, like, it didn't add anything to the series at all. And it was like, why did they do this? And the only thing I can think of is, by the end of it, it felt like they were trying to set up for possible continuations of the franchise with different characters.
I'm sure that's quite likely. Besides the obvious answer was they knew people would buy it.
Well,
that's why they make every video game.
And there is a new Uncharted game called Lost Legacy, and the main character is female, and the person that she takes with her on a lot of her adventures is also female, women of color, both of them actually. Mm. And we bought that game, and we're going to play that next. But the thing is, the setups that I thought I saw in the game for future Uncharted games weren't this one.
Mm.
Like, it was obvious what they were setting up, but that's not the game that they've introduced. Yeah. But it doesn't matter. We'll play it, and we'll probably like it. One of the characters in the new game is an established character from the trilogy, and the other character is a character that was new to the fourth game. But I don't feel like she was set up for a sequel. She was just a character in the fourth game. There were two different setups in 4, and maybe they'll do them. I don't know. So we're going to play it, and we'll see how it goes. Those are the games we've been playing, and that's mostly what we've been doing besides the whole Eclipse thing. But what about you?
Playing Syndicate. I'm nearing the end, which is good because I can sense I'm going to be sick of it any second. And that's what happens with Assassin's Creed. Although, man, Evie Fry is becoming one of my favorite characters. I just love playing her. And I love... this is weird. So I've talked before, you play twins in this game.
Okay.
Fraternal twins. And certain missions are specific to one or the other. Because part of what happens is you show up in London and you both have different ideas about what you should be doing as assassins.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of help each other, but there's also one of us going off on this thing and one's going off on this thing. And so there are certain things we have to, but outside of those things, you can play as either one. And I always play as Evie, and most people always play as Evie. I've been experimenting with Jacob a little bit. In theory, what it's supposed to be is he's better at combat, she's better at stealth. What it really ends up being is she's better at stealth. But anyway, really early on, one of the side things you can do in a bunch is they have fight clubs. And this is a thing that's been around for in the game, where you basically are bare-knuckle boxing other guys.
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, I caught myself the first time I was starting to switch to the brother, because I assumed that would be
more... Yeah, you said this before, yeah.
Yeah, I've talked about this. Yeah, it's so great. Well, I caught somebody else recently. I was talking about how just it's so satisfying to just watch her just beat the shit out of everybody. And they were like, oh, I never thought about it. And they had been playing with the brother every time, just automatically. It hadn't occurred to them.
Mm.
And they were kind of embarrassed about that. But just in general, she's a neat character. There is a thing. So many people have crushes on her, it's clear. And there is a romance thing. But it's a romance thing I'm actually kind of shipping for. So, but just in general, she's like, doesn't take any shit, but is also the nice one of the two of them in a way that works really well. Mm. She's just very, I mean, for being, a street urchin assassin heading a gang in Victorian London, she's very, well-spoken and stuff, but not afraid to, get involved. And so she's just a fun character. And we don't have any fucked up backstory. Oh, God, the book I'm reading right now. Just found out one of the more badass characters in this book, the reason she's that way, of course, because she was gang raped when she was younger. I'm God damn it.
Yeah.
God damn it. If anybody has suggestions for good, space opera type sci-fi written by a woman, please put it on the blog and tell me, because I'm really into some space opera right now, and I like it, and I like the book I'm reading. It's good, but I'm really tired of guys writing it because everything is so goddamn male-gazy. I know the overall attractiveness of every female character of the show. It's not as bad as other ones where they talk about the breast size specifically, but it's still, I'm just like, even characters that very much turn out to just be our hero's, friend or pal or whatever, we first have to go through, how doable they are to them. God damn it. Stop it. Yeah. Anyway. So I'm still playing that. I have watched a couple movies I want to talk about. I rewatched the Mystery Science Theater version of Star Crash. It's still hilarious. But no, there are two in particular I want to talk about. One I just want to touch on briefly, I watched last night. It's called Beyond the Gate. And it was a really neat idea to start with because it's an homage to late 80s, early 90s movies. In the sense that it's set in the present day and two sons are basically dealing with this old video store that their missing father left behind. And there's a lot of reminiscing and stuff, and it's very much an homage to that, but it's not set in that time. And I thought that was clever. That's the only clever thing about it, though. It's ridiculous. Do you remember VCR board games?
Mm-hmm.
Those things where it's a board game and you would put in a VHS tape. Mm-hmm. I think I only ever played one.
I played the Star Wars one.
That's the one. And Darth Vader tells you, so-and-so, go three spaces. And then they're you are the... But you can only play them once, you know? You're kind of stuck after that in most cases. But anyway, they were a big thing, ladies, early 90s. So the premise of this movie is, what if one of those, could steal your soul? what if a VCR board game was evil? And that's it. It's decently acted, it's well produced, it's just stupid and silly. It's on Netflix, so if you want to check it out. I don't regret watching it, but it was dumb. Just for that premise, it was dumb. But, the other one I want to talk about, and again, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. I'm not sure if I watched or rewatched this. I thought I had seen this movie, but watching it, there's bits I don't remember. So I'm wondering if I just saw it in pieces or something, because it was the original Hellraiser.
Mm.
And a lot of us have seen scenes from it and stuff, even if they haven't, because it's kind of a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And as I assume we all know, the Hellraiser series went on and on and on and on and on. I believe, as of now, there's 9 of them.
Wow.
And you had the original one, and then you had a bunch of... And then you had a movie that was a direct sequel, and then you had a bunch of ones that were just, trying to flesh out the mythology.
Mm.
And then you had some that were just horror movies that they stuck the name Hellraiser on and had like a one scene where Pinhead shows up at the end to say, haha, you were bad or whatever. And that's it. So they get shittier as they go on. And I knew this. The first one is a really solid horror movie.
Yeah.
Like, the effects, very dated, but obviously all physical, and they still hold up.
Mm.
Like, they're scary as shit. The premise, very cool. I mean, this, the Cenobites from the Hellraiser series are very much like the Weeping Angels from Doctor Who. They were an awesome idea, and then every time they showed up, more got explained, and they were less awesome.
Mm.
And so in the beginning, it's just creepy, and there's a bunch of them there. I mean, it's not just about Pinhead. There's just a bunch of Cenobites, and it's freaky. But what I really found interesting, have you seen this movie?
No.
It's classic. You guys should check it out. The hero is the daughter, essentially. Let's do this. Is an old enough movie where I'm gonna give you the plot. And the plot, there's not a lot of twists to it, so the plot's pretty straightforward. The idea is that the part of the story beforehand that we just get like a little prologue glimpse to is there's this guy who's like a major hedonist. He's obsessed with like sensations of pleasure, and he gets into like kinky shit and whatever in his life, but he's run out of things. He gets no thrill anymore. What? I think she was yelling at cats. He gets no thrill anymore, so he hears about this thing from somebody, and it's this puzzle box. And if you open it up, it summons the Cenobites. And the Cenobites are from another dimension, and they explore concepts of sensation to the most extreme they can, where pain and pleasure are the same thing. And it's just all fucked up. And arguably, they come possibly from hell. You don't know. They're very demonically. They've all been heavily, like, modified, and it's gross and freaky looking. Pinhead, who's, like, the main guy, has, like, just nails stuck in his entire head.
Yeah, I've seen him. I know what he's about. Or, you know, yeah. I've seen images of him.
Yeah. So, and so he opens the box, and they take him away, and he's gone. And he eventually dies from all the crazy shit they do to him. In the first one, there's a lot of emphasis on hooks on chains that tear at your flesh. That seems to be a big motif in a lot of it. But anyway, he dies. His brother and his brother's wife move into the old family home where he was living before he disappeared. And due to a little accident that spills some blood on the floorboards, he gets sort of revived. But he doesn't have, like, a full body yet, and so he needs more flesh and blood and stuff to rebuild his body. And it turns out that the wife of the brother had an affair with him and still kind of has the thing, and he basically convinces her to help him kill people so he can take their body. But what I did not remember, by the second movie the delivery guy showed up. Dre's food there. By the second movie, because the hero of the film is the daughter of the not dead guy. Okay. The daughter of the brother, I guess. And by the second movie, the stepmother is just a villain, like the other guy, like he's evil or whatever. But in the first one, she's very nuanced and conflicted, because you actually get a flashback of her affair, and it was very, like, coercive, and she was both attracted and sort of repulsed by it. Mm. And that's a constant thing throughout, like, the first half of the movie. And there's a lot of conflict in her, and it's interesting. And so I found that very fascinating. And that coupled with the effects, and like I said, sort of the mystery of all of it, because later they get into more, what are the Cenobites, where do they come from, da-da-da-da, who made the puzzle box? Which becomes the other wrinkle in the movie, is the Cenobites don't like losing people, and so this guy's managed to escape, and they want him. And so... so it's also not just one side versus another side. There's, like, a lot of things involved. But it's very interesting, and then went on to be kind of dumb as the series went on. But yeah, I was sitting on Netflix, and I was like, I should watch that again. And it was really good. So I would recommend that to folks. I've been doing a lot of reading. I'm really trying to get back into reading more because I really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about I read Sandman Overture over my vacation.
Nope.
The sequel to Sandman that he wrote, the Little Lemon series. Did you read that?
It seems like I did, but I don't know how I would have.
If not, I can lend it to you. No, now a long time ago he wrote an 11th volume of Sandman called Endless Nights.
No. It seems like
this is. I guess it's a prequel to Sandman, technically.
It seems like I have it because someone gave it to me.
Hmm.
Jazz might have given it to me. Jazz sends me things all the time. She's very kind.
Jazz don't send me shit.
And like she sent me this great book of Irish fairy tales and stuff that I have mostly read. It seems like I've read this because I have it, and it seems like she got it for me, but I could be wrong about that because she sends me so many things. I don't remember.
I was very pleased, and there's something about it. The story feels very meditative to me. I feel like it's one of those that I should read regularly to help me relax, sort of.
Okay.
And it's not even a relaxing story, but there's just something about the art and the story that I feel very... So I enjoyed that. I also read the first volume of Monstrous, finally.
Oh.
And
my wife has been reading that, but I mean, I think she's only...
I'm not sure the second one is out in trade yet.
Oh, okay.
That may be part of it. I'm conflicted. It's very interesting. It's also super bleak.
Hmm.
Like everything sucks for everybody if you're good or bad, and it's just all awful. So I'm torn. I mean, I'm not torn. I read it. I'm glad I read it. I will probably read if I get my hands on it the next volume, but. Yeah, I don't rave over it the same way. It's heavy, and I wasn't expecting quite that, I think. And just the very first page is a branded naked woman in chains. I was like, wow, I was not prepared for this book.
Yeah. I haven't read it, but my wife's talked about it quite a bit.
It's very interesting, though. It's a very interesting... They've got a few different sort of races. It's like a fantasy. It's like a older fantasy world. And in particular, they have a type of cat that talks and are great philosophers. And so periodically you have these essentially transcripts of lectures given by Professor Tabby, who was a famous one, and they're very serious lectures on the history of the world and stuff like that, and it's very interesting. They're also accompanied by these pictures of like a very studious looking cat and like little kittens frequently who are getting into other shit and stuff. It's a neat idea, and their cosmology is very much there at the center of things, kind of thing. So that was kind of cute, but yeah, it's very dark and heavy. Yeah, I think that's mostly it, I think. Let's hat some stuff.
I have continued to read Mort D'Arthur. I'm reading it very slowly. Sometimes I
was going to say, I don't think it was that long.
It is. It's quite long, but I'm also not reading it quickly. I mean, I read over certain things because I kind of want to sort of let it sink in, like aspects of it.
Not to be confused with the comedic comic book series Mort and Arthur. Different.
But I mean, it's interesting because, I don't know, have you ever read it?
No.
It's not, there are a lot of people who have read it who think it's not a very interesting or entertaining read, or that's even bad. Like it's, even for its time and for its type of literature, it's poorly written. But I don't know why, but I find it pretty fascinating. Like I'll read parts over and over again. Like, this is interesting. What's he really saying here? Part of it is because it's anachronistic, you know. I mean, right in the text, it talks about these events happening like in fact, I just read one portion where it says that the events that are taking place are in like 458 or something. But they talk about jousts and armor and castles and things that just didn't exist at that time.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, that just fascinates me to no end. And I keep thinking, I think one another reason why it takes me so long to read it is because I'll read a section and I'll stop and I'll think, now, actually around 500, this was going on. And this, you know, so this character here, if I wrote this story and I actually put it in 450 to 500 A.D., this character would be, you know, Clovis I of the Franks or whatever, and this would be happening and that would be happening. So it's, I'm finding myself putting together a story where a lot of the things in Mort d'Arthur, but also in, what's that other source that's popular for Arthurian stuff? Anyway, there's another source I've read, too, that I use some of that information.
The scholarly source or a novel?
No, this guy, this was a history. This guy, I mean, what he wrote was supposed to be a history.
I think I know who you're talking about. Monmouth. I think it's sitting in there, actually.
Anyway,
I think I have it
there. So-and-so of Monmouth, I forget the guy's name. But anyway, there's a few other things I've read on Arthurian stuff besides this. But I'm putting together all this stuff, and I'm like, what if I told a story that had some of these similar events, but I actually set it in like 500 with real historical figures outside of Arthur, of course, who's mythological. But you know, what would be the motivation to actually go after the Grail? And as you might know, Clovis was a Merovingian king, and there was the claim on their part that they were descended from Christ, right?
I didn't know Merovingian was a real thing. I thought it was just that dude from the
Matrix
movies.
No. So, but also, from what I could see
from Merovingia?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't know what.
Serious bastardization of the phrase "Mayor of India."
Okay, but anyway, there's prophecies in not in the Mallory stuff, but elsewhere that they're supposed to be. Merlin's prophecies, and they're totally, I mean, they just seem like gibberish. But there's a sense in which some of the early prophecies seem to be warning the people of the British Isles against the rise of Germanic tribes
European
and stuff.
European Union?
No. Maybe. I don't know. But
Merlin
it did
predicted Brexit.
But it did turn out that the Franks had a really profound impact on what would become France and England. So I'm thinking to myself, well, maybe the story is that, you know, Merlin wants him to get the Grail because the Merovingians want the Grail to legitimize their claim to be descendants of Christ, and that will hasten a significant change in European politics that Merlin doesn't want to see happen. So all of this stuff's going through my head while I'm reading it, and that's kind of what's making it take a long time. And a good portion of the book isn't even really about Arthur or the Grail. It's about there's page like hundreds of pages just about Lancelot, hundreds of pages just about Tristan, and hundreds of pages just about this knight or that knight. Which at first I thought maybe I'd skip them, but I realized no, I kind of want to get a sense of these characters, and you know, when later I'm reading about them, they have some depth and they're interesting. And so it's been really fun, but I'm taking it really slow because for whatever reason I just wanted it all sink in. Anyhow, I did draw a question out of that. I'm sorry, everybody.
He did. He's been waving it around.
Beth,
who's, really making a push to get through those old episodes now.
Beth says, Santana's 2017 World Tour is called Transmogrify. Was that name inspired by and or sponsored by the Magical Talking Hat?
I believe the word you're looking for is stolen. Honestly, transmogrify is one of those words that I run into these a lot, and I'm glad I live in the internet age. One day I'm like, you know, I feel like I basically know what that means, but I don't know that I know what it means, and I don't, like, but I use it a lot, and so, I mean, what's the difference between to transmogrify and to transform?
I don't really know if there even is a difference,
right?
Technically. I mean, weird. And like transfiguration, that's a term that's used specifically about the host and transforming into the body of Christ. But is in technically, is that any different than transmogrification or transformation? I have no idea. I wouldn't think they are any different. That there's
read of these note cards, for they are my emails.
Are you suggesting there is a subtle difference between these terms and they're not actually interchangeable?
I'm enough of a linguistics fan that I tend to have issues with direct synonyms. I'm like, are they really the exact same thing?
Yeah.
Like, is there a thing? But, I mean, and I honestly, I don't know. I will say it seems like a weird name for a Carlos Santana tour. But I also feel like it's weird for Carlos Santana to be touring in 2017. So,
well,
Santana's been weird for a while.
I think, as I'm thinking about it, I think the term transfiguration wants to more powerfully assert that one object actually fully and in every way and in essence becomes the other thing.
Okay, but now what about transmogrification?
I don't know. Like, when something transforms into another thing, that term doesn't give the sense of the thing actually becoming the other thing necessarily. Just taking the form of it, right? Like.
See, that's not how, if I was going to do it, I would say that transform is agency neutral, whereas transfigure seems to imply that it is happening to something. Something is not deciding on its own.
Or happening by some natural process.
The agent is transforming at someone else's will. Is how I tend to hear transfigure in my head. Whereas transform, to me, is agency neutral. That just means to change.
Okay.
Transmogrify, I have no idea.
Transmogrify.
Speaking of singers that were big and then sort of snuck back in and stuff, and actually, no, not speaking of that at all, but this is the thing that reminded me of. So the other day, listening to a song in the car.
Yeah.
We've still got the rental car, so it's terrestrial radio.
I've seen that, yeah.
Which I'm not that into, but it's a song by The Weeknd. He's a singer. His name is The Weeknd. Pronounced The Weeknd. That is his stage name.
Okay.
There are two things about him. I really like his music. I almost always hate his lyrics. Weirdly, he sort of has a type where his songs frequently end up being obliquely or sometimes directly about drugging people.
Oh.
Like not... It's very weird. So I tend not to go, but I like the music. I like his voice. I like the most of the compilations that have been done, stuff like that. The composition, sorry, that's what I meant to say. Anyway, there's a song on the radio. Haven't heard before. It's called Secrets. Two things about it. First one, the chorus, definitely. I don't know about the verses because I don't remember the verses of the song, are from an older song. It's like a remake of a song, I believe, also called Secrets, that was big in like the 80s. I hear the secrets that you keep when you're talking in your sleep.
Mm-hmm.
That song. Not remotely the same melody, though.
Mm.
So same lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different melody. So I'm like, what? Why? But then later, also, at the end of each chorus, is a straight-up sample. Like, they clearly just took the music that already was there for the refrain of a Tears for Fears song. I think maybe Pale Shelter. I'm not sure. But there's a section that, like, that they just put in here for, again, why? Like, especially together, like, sampling I get, and you know, like, Fall Out Boy had that Uma Thurman song, and they put in the middle their version of the Munsters theme in there, and it's dumb, but I'm like, they thought it was a cool sound, and they did that, but who's like, you know what, those lyrics, those repetitive ones about hearing the secrets that you keep when you're talking in your sleep, I like those. I don't like the tune. Also tack on some Tears for Fears in here. P.S. Don't like the song.
Okay.
For the record. Not good. But what? That's why I've got three or four levels of like, why? What are you doing? Well, that was weird. There's my honest segue. Frequently nowadays, when Carlos Santana's doing stuff, I'm like, what? Why? What are you doing? And that's what made me think of this. So that's all I got for that one. Give me that.
Transmogrification.
Transmogrifier. But yeah, he owes us some royalties, I think.
I don't even know I get the trans part of transmogrify, but what's mog or mogrif?
Sometimes I just mogrify, but...
What is that?
I don't know. I made that up. A mog is a little creature from the Final Fantasy series.
Yes, whatever.
Koopo.
Anyway, I don't know.
All right. Oh. This is one from Jazz.
Okay.
It might get a little weird. What are your main similarities and differences with the other inquiring servant of the hat? Have I missed inquiring all these years?
I don't know.
Holy shit, what is wrong with me? Staring me in the face.
Why would this get weird?
Inquiring. I don't know. We're supposed to say what we think is different or the same between us and the other one.
Different or different and?
Both and. Similarities and difference. Compare and contrast, as it were.
I tend to think that...
I'm better looking. I mean, that's a big one.
I'll take your word for that one.
William's blind. I poke fun at him by mocking his visibility.
I tend to think that
a good joke.
That we kind of start with a lot of the same assumptions about, you know, the universe and how it works, people in general, but there's just one. While we're starting at this same foundational place, there's a fundamental question that comes up in that place, where if you answer the question one way, you kind of take off in one direction, and if you answer the question another way, you take off pretty much in the opposite direction. And from that point forward, we're about as opposite as can be. But because we start in that similar space, in that similar spot, you know, that's enough common ground for us, you know, to be very good friends and to agree on most things in a practical sense. But overall, to see the world through, each one of us sees it through a decidedly different pair of glasses, I think.
Yeah, because I would disagree that we sort of have the same assumption you said about how the world works.
Well, I just mean that by that I mean, like we don't put a lot of stock in the way a lot of other people talk about certain metaphysical things or certain,
yeah.
You know. We
see, I feel like our similarities are much more aspirational than perceptual. I feel like we are very similar in what we want out of life and think we should like do with life, like how we think it, what we think a good way to live is.
Well, sure,
but it's the execution, we're very different.
Yeah, I guess that speaks to what I'm saying in terms of like ethics, right? Like how we
got, yes, that's a good way. We come from a very similar ethical place.
Ethical place, yes. Right. And also I think a very similar metaphysical place. I mean, we don't, when other people are throwing around words like good and evil, mm-hmm. and other types of dichotomies like that, that tends to mean nothing to us, or that doesn't make sense to us at all. And so, like I say, we start at a very similar ethical place, but then, like I said, there's a question, a key question, and I guess I'm not even sure what that question is, that comes up, and we answer it in different ways, and that sends us in two different directions in what you were saying and how the thing is executed. One time we had this conversation, and maybe I don't know if this is it or if this is related to it or if it's totally off, but I'll bring it up in case it has any kind of relevance. One time we were having a conversation, and it seemed like
we were gonna kiss.
No, it seemed like you approach life and assumed everybody approached life, I think, with kind of, well, if I don't have any reason not to do it, then I'll do it. Whereas I was insisting I approach life as, well, if I don't have any reason to do it, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to, you know, because if I don't have any reason to do it, that means I could be doing something else instead of this thing for a reason. Whereas your approach was, well, if I don't have any reason not to do it, if it's not going to harm me or somebody else, or I don't mind how much harm it makes to me, or it's not going to whatever, then I'll do it. And you seem to think that up to that point you were talking to me, you kind of assumed that's how human beings were, that they just did whatever they did unless they had some reason not to do it.
A curious species overall.
Sure.
Because that's out of curiosity. If there's not a reason for me not to do something, but it sounds dumb and boring, I'm not
going to
do it.
All right.
I'm curious, what's that like? Is there a reason I shouldn't try it? No? Okay. I'll do it. Try it out.
But
it sucked. Okay, bye.
But for me, there's like, it's almost like, as far back as I can remember, there's like a mission. And it's got to serve the mission. You know, I can't just be curious about it, or, oh, I've never experienced this before.
Whatever. And that's a very distinctive difference.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I 100% have no mission. I never have.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, for me, there's, it seems like, I just have this image in my head of you and me meeting in the same place where there's very similar beliefs, there's very similar approach to different problems and ethics and everything, but there's one question that comes up wherein we might differ, and then we do differ in it. Like, okay, well, given all of this, I'm going to make a plan, and I'm going to make all my decisions based on a plan.
You start building a road, I'm just going to wander off in the woods.
Yeah, exactly. And for you, it's like, no, based on all of this, forget a plan. It's pointless, so I'm not going to worry about a plan. And then that makes us opposites in that particular way, but because we're still sort of in the same space in terms of those ethical questions and those metaphysical beliefs, that way we're opposite doesn't get in the way of us being very dear friends.
Yeah, socially, it's very complimentary.
Because
that's the thing. It's like we agree on stuff, and that we can, you know, I'm super into my goddamn bubble. I have problems hanging out with people who have, like, strongly different opinions from me, and I know I should work on that, but I'm like, no, I don't want to argue, whatever. But you're in a position where, like, yeah, in terms of ethics, I feel like you and I agree, so after that, it's just, like, shit we do is different. So
Oh,
this is a differing opinion that it doesn't cause me stress to deal with. I don't have to question myself in the process. I can just judge you. No. I think that is true. But
I think so. I think it just comes down to.
But I think that difference manifest. That's why we work good as friends.
Yeah.
But I don't think we can downplay that. I mean, I think that difference is huge, and has made our lives drastically different.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not a difference that makes a difference in terms of us being friends and us of doing things together, but in terms of how it's impacted our individual lives, we're very, you know, you can look at my life and your life and say, okay, they live very different lives based on that small difference.
And I think perceptually it's very different. I think we have the same ethics. I don't think we see the same things when we look at things.
I think you're right about that.
I, not unlike God, am watching Earth from a distance. Seriously.
Do I look like your friend?
What is that song about? Are we saying that God is shitty? What are we saying? What is that song? I want to meet Bette Midler just to ask her. I don't understand it. No, you're not on Twitter. You didn't see, though. I had a revelation today.
Okay.
We were in
an epiphany, as it were?
We were in Pizza Hut. and for lunch, and they were playing My Best Friend's Girlfriend by the Cars.
Okay.
Rico Kasich, you know.
Yeah.
And She Used to Be Mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I was suddenly like, what if My Best Friend's Girlfriend is being sung by Jesse after Rick Springfield stole his girlfriend?
Mm.
And then I was just like,
yeah, blew your mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
Yeah. Because I'm constantly mixing up those songs. Seriously. Maybe it's because they're together. It's interesting.
But I think, though, I think we rarely disagree on things, on issues of reality. But we also don't disagree on what a person should do about it, because we respect that a person should do just whatever they feel like doing or want to do about it.
In general, yeah.
And so, in general, right. So when we have the same perspective on something, but it leads you to do something even the opposite of what I would do, that's okay, because you can do what you want, and I can do what I want, and so we don't have a conflict about it.
It was funny, just today, a friend who does not listen to the podcast was talking about odd ways in which their parents have changed as they got older,
mm-hmm.
which then switched to them saying, yeah, but there are a lot of other major things that they have not changed their opinion on that I really wish they had, because their parents are very religious and they're not, and they're still close with them, but there are areas where they majorly conflict like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were talking about this, and, you know, I have a lot of theories about old people. And the whole idea that you sort of get more insular and you don't necessarily notice. And so what is your narrow field of vision? You start to more and more think it's the world.
Sure.
And stuff like that. And he, of course, is like, that's going to happen to us. And I was like, it will some, but we can work on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, how do you do that? And I was like, well, you know, you gotta always be sort of checking in again. You know, what are my base principles and beliefs? Is how I act and the things I do and the things I say in line with that? If not, what? And do I really know what the fuck I'm talking about? I feel like that's a huge one. That's one. This week I has been littered with moments where I've been like, oh, that's probably what it's like for this other demographic that I have nothing to do with. Actually, I'm gonna tell you this one.
Okay.
It's interesting. It's off topic, but fight me. So this stupid movie, Beyond the Gates.
Okay.
It's two brothers, and one of them's girlfriend or whatever shows up, and the brothers are estranged because one of them left town and the other one stuck around and stuff like that. But anyway, early on, the brother who's the good brother, the brother who left town, who's back now, and he's the upright professional one, we find out in a private conversation between him and his girlfriend that he's been dealing with some issues, and he fucked up their relationship, and now they're working on repairing it, and he's doing much better.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know the details at this point. Later on, in a dinner scene, the girlfriend makes a reference to such and such. I used to do blah, 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 right up until I broke my wrist. And the guy's like, you broke your wrist? How did that happen? Pause, pause, pause. I fell. Quick change of topic. So I'm like, okay, yeah, no, I know what's going on now.
Sure, sure.
But because this is a dumb movie, we're going to have to tell us later. And so we do later. Turns out that brother used to have a big drinking problem, and this was an issue.
Mm.
But here's where it gets weird. Mm. Bear with me on this one, though, because I'm getting to a point that has nothing to do with this. According to her explaining it to somebody, one time when he had been drinking, they were having a fight, and he grabbed her wrist too hard and broke it.
Mm.
I'm thinking about this later, like when I'm headed to bed and stuff, and I was like, is that a thing? Like, could you really do that?
I don't know.
I'm like, that seems weird. I had assumed, like, you know, pushed her down and she hit it on something or, you know, something like that. But I'm like, could you really do that? And I was like, maybe I'll talk. Trish was already asleep. I'm like, maybe I'll talk to her about it more. And then it suddenly hit me. I'm like, or maybe this is a creepy as fuck thing to talk about, especially to your wife. I'm like, maybe, I'm not saying it would scare Trish or whatever thing, but I mean, you know, given the reality of being a woman in the world and that constant sort of threat of physical violence that just is present, thanks to men being how they are, I'm like, yeah, maybe that would make her uncomfortable. And so what I did instead is I asked her about that the next day. And she said, she's like, I don't think I'd be creeped out or whatever. I probably wouldn't engage, and I would probably tell you it was in poor taste. And I was like, and I get that, but that's the thing. As soon as I get it, and I've had a few of those this week, so I'm very big right now on, like, remember the limits of your unique experience. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge one. But anyway, so I'm talking with my friend about this, and I told him this, and he's like, yeah, that makes sense. He's like, I use the golden rule a lot. I think that's a good one. And I totally, we didn't have much time left. I had to do some work before I left, so I didn't get, but I wanted to be like, that's funny, we were just talking about that recently, and we were like, me and William are both like that.
Well, we've been watching a lot of Forensic Files lately.
Ew.
And that's been an interesting experience, because I don't know. A lot of statistics are shared that you maybe didn't know. Like, things like a lot of hit-and-run accidents are never solved. You know, things like that. 80% of homicides are someone you know. You know, things like that.
Yeah.
Some of the things you guess, some of the things you don't know.
Yeah.
But it's pretty common for you know, for a spouse to have been killed, and if, you know, like a wife or a husband, and it was the spouse that did it, right? You find out.
Yeah.
And in many of the cases, you know, there's an insurance policy purchased at a time or whatever. Yeah. And sometimes my wife and I will talk about this show is going to make us feel weird whenever we get life insurance policies on each other. Well, I mean, I have a life insurance policy.
Yeah.
I believe she does too, and that whatever. And neither one of us have plans to get other ones, but it's like, you just get it in your head, you know, like, this is something people do.
Yeah.
Right before they kill their spouse.
But it also becomes just a bigger thing in general. Trish was upping her, it's not a 401k, it's the non-profit, it's a 407b or something.
Sure.
But she was upping her contribution, and she's talking to me about it at work over chat, and I was in the middle of something, and I like had a bunch of stuff, and I was like, okay, whatever, that's great, more money, okay, that's fine, because it was like literally like our budget was good, and she had just gotten a raise. She's like, what if I put it all into that? And I'm like, great. And she's like, just fair warning, the issue for you is if something happened and we got divorced, you probably wouldn't, like, I would probably get to keep all of that myself. And I'm just like, I don't care. And then later I was like, I appreciate that was a concern. I am not concerned about that. And she's like, I know, I didn't think it was a thing, but, you know, like, people do that. And I'm like, I get it. That is a thing that exists in marriages. But as I've said many times, like, she has a blank check to fuck me over in so many different ways at least once. After then I will reevaluate. But I trust her with everything. So I'm like, yeah. I'm not concerned that you have more money in retirement than I do.
I don't know why we're watching this forensic files thing, honestly. I don't know why we're doing it. You know, it's like...
Instead, you should watch Howard.
It's been on Netflix for a long time. I think we just decided, hey, let's just watch one of these. It's short or something, like she was going to go back to work. It was over lunch or whatever. And then we just kept watching them. And there's very little in them that we, because a lot of them are old.
Yeah.
So if you've paid attention to the news, or if you've watched any other,
you're like, they caught that dude already.
Yeah. Or if you've watched any other crime procedurals, there are a lot of things you already know that forensic people use. Some of it's stuff I didn't know, but then after a while, it's the same stuff over and over again. Mm-hmm. But doesn't matter. There's still something...
compelling?
It's just interesting about it.
Because I have discovered, especially with movies and TV, good and entertaining are very different from compelling. And there's been stuff... I have watched shows that I hated, but, like, I had to see what would happen next.
Well, I think one thing that keeps us watching is that we don't always... Sometimes we're a little leery about what it is. Like, well, that I don't think that they had enough evidence really to put that person in jail. We get that. Or another thing is, okay, they had enough evidence for that guy, but I don't... One of the things they did was, like, there were a few episodes where the police were putting trackers on people's cars without their knowledge, which I think the Supreme Court said you can't do that anymore without a warrant.
I would guess.
That was, like, 5 or 6 years ago the Supreme Court did that. And there were other things like, well, this guy disappeared and unfortunately we couldn't track him because he didn't have a debit card or a credit card. And I'm just thinking, that's awful. It's awful the fact that I have a debit card and a credit card, which means anyone could track me if have the inclination to do it. I mean, sure, this guy probably was a murderer or whatever, but then they can do it to anybody.
Exactly, yes.
And that's kind of scary. Yeah. Cell phone's the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't carry a cell phone, but that's the way they catch a lot of people is they get them with their cell phones. It's like, well, that doesn't seem right that they can just do that. But that's something even when we watch crime procedurals, like, we watch Major Crime sometimes, and it's just a taken-for-granted thing that, okay, well, we're going to look at this guy's financials, or we're going to look at the cameras because there's cameras all over the city, and we can watch everyone this way. And there's a lot of federal things that happen. And you're watching and you're thinking, this is just a taken-for-granted part of reality now in these TV shows. And nobody's like, this is terrible. This shouldn't be something cops can do.
In these TV shows, it is exceptionally rare. Like, it's the whole point of the story if it happens. And it's very rare that somebody gets full-on, like, taken in and tried and convicted, and it turns out to be the wrong person.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you get... When you bring in somebody for questioning, sometimes you may find out, oh, we got the wrong guy. Yeah, but, like, it's always right. Like, there's no false convictions and shit.
Like, major crimes is that way. Just about every procedural I've ever seen, there's a formula now.
Well, the fucking closer, Kira Sedgwick, never got anybody to confess who it turned out wasn't
no, that's
actually
true.
The killer.
But also the person they finally got to confess or whatever, it was like the third person they brought in who they were certain it was that person.
Yeah.
That's the formula. It's like the first three people are not the person, but they're certain it is the person. And so you're thinking, man, this isn't good.
And then, of course, it's just that they're bad mysteries, too, because, you know, Castle Rules for procedurals, which works on most procedural shows. The first person, once the investigation starts, who is introduced, but then has no point in it.
Yeah, that's the person
that's
who
the
did
murderer.
It. Yeah. Also, especially.
Frequently it's like, oh, this is so and so, they also work here, and they're like, hi. And then they leave.
Especially if it seems like a bit part, but it's an actor you recognize.
That
you know they did it.
They've slowly gotten better with that. Back in the 80s, it was really bad.
Oh, man.
Because it was like, oh, that. Wow, they got him for an episode. Yeah. I wonder what part he's playing.
And it looks like a bit part, and you're like, no, they didn't give this guy a bit part. He did it. She did it. Whatever.
I fucking had that season 3 of Fargo. There's a scene where one of the characters... There's a whole episode where one character leaves the Midwest and goes to California to look in on some stuff.
Okay.
And on her flight, she ends up talking to a guy next to her. And then later, in town, she runs into him somewhere else, and they have another conversation. And then she leaves again, and that's it. Both times played by Ray Weiss.
Okay.
I'm like, you don't fucking bring Ray Weiss in for two conversations about nothing. And I didn't finish out the series, but I'm pretty sure the season proved me right. Because I'm just like, you don't have that scene with any actor. Like, there's no point in having a scene that's just cute, and then you go... You certainly don't have it with Ray Weiss. Right, it's, like, recognizable.
So, yeah, I think that's probably why we watch it, because we're like, oh, that's not right, or that person probably wasn't guilty. And
hate watching forensic shows.
Kind of, in a way.
I get that.
Kind of, in a way.
Give us your last thought on it, because we are...
No, that's...
Possibly a new record for overtime.
I don't even know how we got onto talking about that.
You did it. I was just over here hanging out.
All right. Wrap us up then. This isn't our wrap-up song.
No, this is what I was doing. Oh, I was just saying, while you were over there talking about French fries, I was like...
Yes.
I realized the other day I should start a band and call it Authentic Irish Setter.
But most of all, I'm 100% Labrador Retriever.
Yeah. Oh my god. So, god, there's no time. We're way over time. If you remind me last week, I'll tell you a story about this lady I go to the gym with and something I found out about her license plate. Anyway, if you would like to do your own podcast, then do it, whatever. If you'd like to tell us what you thought about this, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Seriously, people, it's not hard to do podcasts. See? don't ask us. You can ask William to listen. He will probably will. Don't ask me. I don't even listen to ours. Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us your thoughts on all of this stuff. Yeah. And that's mostly it. I mean, go to the blog and write in that. We need more writing. Come on.
Yep.
TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Also, listen again next week, and the week after that, and the week after that. But that's all you really got to do. Like that, you don't even have to remember the episode number.
Because I don't.
Yep.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.